This is a conspiracy. That's what this is.
One big damn conspiracy! And everyone's in on it!
I know what's going on.
Did IQs just drop sharply while I was away?
The person is smart. People are dumb, panicky, dangerous animals, and you know it.
Did you see the memo about this?
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
Don't you see what this means? This is it! This is the beginning of everything! I've been waiting for this all my life!
Welcome to episode 56 of your Missing the Point podcast, where we discuss the weird, the wonderful, and the downright bizarre aspects of life, as we have conversations with people from all over the world. Today, it's finally happening. The conversation we have tried four times to have is coming into fruition. Fozzie, my mate, is back to finally talk about some Hindu mysticism, some Indian culture, some ancient architecture, the weird and wild subcontinent that we all know as India, the ancient kingdom of Ind. We are here. Welcome, Fozzie.
Thank you. Thank you for having me again, man. yeah, dude, what an experience. And none of this came into being until, like, it's so weird. Like, I came back to Twitter. Like, I had no intention to come back to Twitter. But when I'm like, you know, at the time, I was like, I love Elon Musk, spaceships, satellites, Teslas, woo! I was like on the Musk train the whole time. I wasn't off. I was like, bro, you need to check out Elon Musk. I was promoting him left and right. But then I came onto Twitter. My thoughts on Elon Musk have certainly developed since then. But anyway, we'll have another conversation.
This is a funny thing, Fozzie. This is like the impressions I first got of you when I heard you speak, because this is a very articulate, well-spoken, intelligent man. But the idea I got from your Twitter and the conversations, and in particular your profile pic, was he is a based, you know, liberal, not liberal, a really based type of conservative guy. He's got the cowboy hat on. He's Aussie. That's the impression I had at the start. And I've seen this evolution akin to the Beatles, where they were very straight-laced, nice suits, looked like working-class men, were very upstanding citizens. They went to India and got a little bit funky and weird. Seeing that thing come out of you as well, and it lines up with me perfectly.
Well, I probably
got the beard going, my friend. You ditched the cowboy hat. You've been abroad, your horizons have just been expanded, and here we are.
I am actually going to be acquiring, and I told myself I would do it on the previous trip, but I didn't do it. I thought to myself, like, this is obviously post sort of doing all my recordings, but I thought to myself, like, fuck, these recordings would have just been so much better should I have worn that fucking cowboy hat. But this time I'm going to get one, like, and there's a few places I'm going to go to, but we can come back to the places I will go to in the future, because we're going to talk about a 600,000 year old pyramid later in the episode. But
this lines up with Paleolithic and Neolithic so much, and that's way, way later than that too. I love it. Let's get going. Where do you want to start?
So I guess I came back to Twitter after Elon Musk purchased it, had the cowboy hat on, just as like a sort of, you know, it's all business, baby.
Went
just
to the try Beatles and, like, journey.
Yeah, you know, like, just wanted to let people know that, like, hey, I'm here, like, let's have a fucking gas bag. And I mean, at the time, I didn't have any intention of, like, going to India. This wasn't like just this purely existed out of happenstance. One of the not the exact first, but early on, one of the spaces that I went into was a Hindu space, just purely by happenstance. Someone that I followed was in there, so I jumped in. And there's these guys I mentioned on the last episode. My mate Duke, he was running the space with a mate of his named Sammy. And there's another guy in there called Sashwat. And we just ended up talking, and as we're having these conversations, like these sort of like deep philosophical conversations about yourself, about the world, about spirituality, I'm like, oh my God, these were already pre-existing thoughts that I had had, obviously not from the dimension of Hinduism, from the aspects of deities and stuff like that, but mainly from like my sort of like inner thoughts about the world. Like, this is like me untouched by like religion. You know, I was baptized Roman Catholic, but I never had a pull into it. I never have a draw into it. I went to a Catholic primary school. I went to an all boys Catholic secondary college. You know, I was in church every Friday, like doing worship every Friday. But there was none of that gave me a draw into, or none of it gave me this idea of looking inwards and like sort of having this idea of being able to like sort of, I guess, harness yourself and propagate your truest version of yourself within the world.
Would you describe it as like a spiritual or theological itch that was almost being like going like must like growing up in that type of a denominational rut almost? You're going through the system, you're growing up in the institution of church and the institution of Roman Catholicism, that it's that barriers that are kind of built around it. There's almost, you're almost deterred from asking those questions and you internalize it. The longer you internalize something, the stronger the need for having that itch scratched becomes. 100%. And was that conversation that kind of like the mechanism in which you felt the scratch happening?
Well, I would say the mechanism that started all of this was 2017 when I took psilocybin mushrooms for the first time.
Ooh, did you see Clockwork Elves?
I didn't see Clockwork Elves. I did not see any Clockwork Elves. Not on mushrooms anyway. I've only
any entities at all?
Yes. Okay. So, but as I said, well, I haven't said, but I will say now. So everyone sort of has this individual experience. But from all the conversations I've had with people that have done mushrooms, I can deduce that everyone has a similar experience when it comes to the nature of interaction with something else. And I don't just mean like what you visually see while you're on mushrooms or feel, but there is this sense that there is another being that's, and this is where it gets into the dialectic of like mushroom users, where some will go like, it's God, and some will go, it's you. I'm more in the line of it's you, but I also, well, I kind of sit in between, to be honest. I've always been a bit of a fence sitter. So if I'm being truthful to myself, I kind of see a bit of both, because when you have these experiences, and this was early on, I haven't done mushrooms now for fuck almost like 3 years. But when I did it for that sort of first time and had a real crazy experience, I was almost like having a deep conversation with myself about trauma, about memories and experiences and stuff like that. And it sort of like allowed me to go through it and process it. But in that discovery of processing it and learning more about myself and the world subsequently, I began to formulate ideas in my mind about like action and consequence and stuff like that. And I hadn't done like really any reading by this stage, bro. Like, I was like World of Warcraft, baby. I was like slaying dragons for years, mate. I was saving you guys from the dragons burning the cities.
Were you running Horde?
Oh, I was Horde, mate. I started off as a druid, and then later down the line of my gaming career, then I became a shaman. And when it was crazy, like enhancement shaman as well. But anyway, yeah. So
to quickly circle back, you spoke about the idea of people have the two polar opposite ideas of either just what you're encountering is God, or you're encountering self. Yeah. And I'm going to go back to a conversation we had in the last episode where I referenced Book of John and Paul, in which they mention the idea of God and self are almost the same thing, because we have the divinity of God within us, that once we recognize that, like, the only way to God is through Christ. And if you recognize that, you know, kingdom of heaven is already inside you, half the battle's already done. So I think where you're coming from is that fence sitting approach, air quotes, you know, like a lot of things, it seems to ring true. As soon as you pigeonhole yourself into a set way of being or a set way of thinking, I think you put those barriers up that prevent you from actually gaining that knowledge and understanding any further.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, that's happened in conversations, or that sort of idea has come forward in conversations early on that I was having with the Hindu community when I was jumping into Twitter spaces. And as this is all sort of unfolding, bro, there was some weird stuff that was begun to happen in my life. At this stage of my life, so this is going back last year, prior to February, I was suffering from night terrors. And I was suffering from night terrors frequently, like 2 to 3 times a week. And if anyone's had a night terror, actually, I'll at least describe my experience of what I would have from the night terror or night terrors, but they're all pretty much the same. But the first time I had it when I was 16, there was this feeling that there was a sense of dread in the room. The room was cold. I felt like there was an entity in the room. I couldn't move. I woke up, maybe I was asleep for like three, four hours.
Give
us. Yeah, dude.
This intros with something I've experienced are very similar. You finish and I'm going to throw out you. Go
sweet.
For it, brother. Keep going.
That's all right. And so I remember waking up. I knew straight away I couldn't move. And I started hyperventilating. Not hyperventilating, but like I could feel that there was something in the room. You know when, and I'm sure this happens to many people, when someone's staring at you and you'll just like happen to look in a direction, you catch them staring at you, you got that thing that like, you know, people refer to, you know, comically, spidey sense, you know, but that, whatever that thing is, that survival mechanism that's built into us. Anyway, so in this room, in my bedroom at the time, there was this coldness. I couldn't move. And all of a sudden, like I felt, like there was a presence that had like literally climbed onto my bed, bro. I could feel like there was a vibration in my mattress. And I just started feeling this compression on my chest where it genuinely felt like there was a pair of hands pushing down on me or reaching into me. And from that moment when I was 16 is when I got addicted to World of Warcraft, right? Shortly after that event had taken place. And let's fast forward. You know, now we're going to fast forward more or less, you know, 10 to 15 years down the track. And up until last year, even though I took the mushrooms, there was still this sense of dread. There was still something else inside of me that was almost like it was, it was like something that where I didn't want to let go. It was almost like I had become so addicted to something that I couldn't let go of whatever it was that I was addicted to. But this is after I'd already like sort of had all these self-discoveries about myself and this and that. Like I could go into like my exorcism on fucking mushrooms, bro, like full on. Like I got 3 witnesses to this. Like I had a full on exorcism, bro. And we'll come back to that if you would like to come back to that. But so after I started talking to the Hindu community, 2 months in, I made a friend, a very good friend who I mentioned last week. His name's Manchu. Beautiful fucking soul. And we started having these behind the scenes outside of Twitter. We started having these even deeper conversations about spirituality and yourself within the world and stuff like that. And within a week of me having those conversations with him, and by this stage, there was things that had already happened in my life that was already a bit weird. And one of those was I was having lights in the house that were flickering. My Wi-Fi was dropping off. My headphones, I had JBL headphones that unfortunately I lost in India, or I thought someone nicked them from my pocket. Either way, I'll never figure that out. But the right one had stopped working and hadn't worked for like 2-3 months, right? And I had said this to my friend, and he said, I want you to try Hanuman Chalisa. And Hanuman Chalisa is essentially a worshipping ritual that adheres to Hanuman, which is one of the deities in Hinduism. And it's to sort of like bolster your energy and push back out any negative energy. And I did this Hanuman Chalisa this night. I took it very seriously, like very legit. Yeah. You're like, there's a fire element to it in our regard, but it's not, you know, there's no like burning of anything. Like it's merely just lighting a candle. Like that idea of lighting fire is enough to sort of like inhibit the essence or the spirit or the energy. So I do this sort of ritual, and it's all spoken in Sanskrit. I didn't speak it, just playing it through the speaker is enough to sort of like elicit this sort of like response. The next morning I wake up, I knew straight away the energy in the house had completely deviated. My headphones had started working. The flickering lights had completely stopped. And from a week after this event had happened, I'd already had a conversation with my friend by this stage, and his mind was fucking blown that this had happened like that quickly, or this thing had happened after me doing this. And then fast forward a week, this night I had a night terror. But it was not the same night terror that I'd have had many, many times prior, where the room's like cold and I can feel like a sort of presence. It wouldn't be always since the first time that I have like the feeling of hands pressing down on me, but that feeling that there's a presence in the room to almost like shake me just a bit. So like sort of keeps me restless so I don't sleep. And on the occasion since then, I will get the sleep paralysis as well. It hasn't happened every time, but that feeling was always there. And so this particular night, it was warm and embracing. And I'd woken up, but I couldn't open my eyes. But my body was, I couldn't move. I had complete sleep paralysis, but I didn't feel uncomfortable. And all of a sudden I saw this, and it's going to sound crazy. I know it's going to fucking sound ridiculous, but I've only said this to two other individuals. I'm happy to say this on this podcast now, because I know since my journey in India, like this is the way it was intended to happen. So I saw this golden head. I couldn't really make out the face all that well, but what stood out to me was the crown. This head had a massive step-like pyramidal crown that was above its head, and it was in my mind and it was floating, and there was no words that were spoken, but there was this feeling that like, almost like you're ready for like the next step, like whatever that was at the time. I couldn't sort of narrow that down at the time. There was so much going on with me sort of like entrenching myself in the Hindu community and having these discussions about spirituality and theology and all this sort of stuff and manifesting, la 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 la. Next day I have a Microsoft Teams call with my mate. We're on the video call and I tell him what I'd experienced that night. He looks to his right. I see his eyes fucking pop out of his head, and he grabs a photo, and it's a photo of Krishna with all the previous avatars of like Vishnu sort of ascending behind him. Like it's almost like has this sort of like infinity mirror effect going on. and Krishna was the one that had the crown. It was exactly the same crown. And we got fucking chills. And like that day, I knew that day, that morning that I woke up and after having the conversation with him, I'm like, I need to go to India. And that day I just fucking booked a ticket, bro. I just done. And then fast forward, I booked it like months in advance. Obviously I had to get everything ready and stuff like that, you know, sort of arrange everything while I'm gone. And some stuff had sort of happened during that time. Like, you know, I continued doing Hanuman Chalisa. I still continue to do it to this day. There's a couple of other ones as well. There's what they call Shiva Tandav, which is like a worship to Shiva. And then there's Ganapati Athraveshwar, which is Ganapati is another term for another name of Ganesh. And Athraveshwar is like a spoken ritual to sort of bolster one's, have control over one's like primal nature. So for me, my problems are I'm a horny fucker and I subject myself to like the more diabolical aspects of the human condition when it comes to sexual depravity. And I mean that in like the best way. I'm not like gonna sit here and just be like, oh, you know, like whatever. Like men are men, women are women. We both have our things. Everyone loves sex. No one's gonna dismiss that. And you know, with the world around us, pornography, this and that, we feed that element of ourselves. Imagine seven deadly sins, lust, stuff like that. So like the Ganapati Athraveshwar like helps to bolster, for me at least, to sort of fortify my mind sort of situation. I don't know if you got that. That was from now, one of the Doctor Strange films.
Now we've had conversations outside of podcast where I think you're kind of leaning towards the idea that Christ could be one of the reincarnations or the precursor of the Kali Yuga. Like when Vishnu, is it Vishnu? Please correct me if I'm wrong. I'm very, very, very That's minimalist right. of my ideas.
I'm still relatively fresh to this as that, well, that, but I'll do my
I think,
best.
I think a lot of Hindus kind of go with this now that Christ could be a variation of Vishnu, one of the variations that's come to Earth.
Buddhists will tell you Jesus was one of the Buddhas. They'll say Jesus was the 22nd Buddha, I believe it might be. And and some Hindus will claim that Jesus is the avatar of Vishnu, okay. Which and Vishnu represents life, right? In the Holy Trinity of Hinduism, you've got, which is funny, they actually, while I was in India, I met three individuals. One was a museum operator at Rani Ki Vau, the Queen's Stepwell in Pathan, Gujarat. And the other two were at just one temple in Mumbai and then one temple in Ahmedabad, which is one of the cities in Gujarat, have referred to the Holy Trinity as God, which represents generator, operator, destroyer. Generator the creation is Brahma. Vishnu is the preserver of life, preservation, like the eternal essence. But he's also, that same thing is also represented as water as well. And a lot of microsects of Hinduism will disagree with me on that particular note, but not all. There's definitely references to Vishnu being the representation of water. But yes, there are Hindus that believe that Jesus was a reincarnated version of Vishnu. And then obviously you've got Shiva, the destroyer, but they all sort of represent something similar. So like birth, death and life, father, son, or, you know, sort of birth, life, preservation and destruction, like returning back to the original source. There's so many sort of interlinks between the theologies that
there is.
You know, it was weird to me when I started sort of having these conversations. It was purely happenstance, mind you. Like, I didn't go out of my way to like search up, you know, if you asked me 5 months before I came to Twitter, what do you think of Hindus? Bro, what the fuck's a Hindu? Like, I had, you know, like, bro, I'm a shaman. I play World of Warcraft, bro. Like, what's, you know?
The only reason I asked that was, I think it really speaks to how you're reaching people with what you're talking about. Some of my longtime listeners I had a conversation with within the past week, and they said, you're a really young, smart guy, and they may be biased in being Christians. They had a worry that you might be led astray by going to, you know, the land of a thousand gods and whatnot. But I personally think that, you know, you've got this idea of a belief in Christ, no matter what that idea 100%. Of Christ is to you, you've still 100%. Got it. And I think that'll give you definitely an element of protection. But I would be remiss if I didn't say that I wasn't keeping a rope around your waist and keeping you at length to keep you safe, mate. Whole conversation you just said about sleep paralysis rings true of my experiences in my mid to late 20s, where listeners of this show would know, if you're a new listener, go back to episode 34, Shadow People, Dark Entities and Sleep Paralysis with Vicky Joy Anderson. My experience was very similar. I was at a point in my life where, you know, I got very good marks in school. I never went to university. I was from a working middle-class family who was told pretty much to go out, get a job. I didn't find all the jobs I was doing fulfilling. They weren't satiating my void of life and meaning. And I was kind of led astray in that my enjoyment in life was going out every weekend, every Friday, Saturday, sometimes Sundays with the boys, having drinks, chasing girls.
Yeah.
I got to a point where I was filling my void of my life by racking up notches on the belt.
Yeah.
And in hindsight, I'm actually disgusted in how often I did that. And that kind of, I believe, now opened me up to these dark entities, which came to me in my life as sleep paralysis.
Mm-hmm.
Early in my 20s, I thought it was just, you know, it was what it was. I wake up in the middle of the night, can't move my body. It's weird. And progressively over time, the more I didn't recognize my own meaning and what I should be doing in life, it kind of escalated each time. Eventually got to a point where there was physically an entity in the room I could see sitting in the corner watching me. It got to the point where it was on my chest. It got to the point where it was sitting next to me. And it kind of culminated in a stage where I'd broken up with a girl who I thought was the girl to give me meaning. She cheated on me, all sorts of horrible stuff. And I went and got on the beers with a mate, you know, got on the sauce to try and deal with my emotions and what was going on. Worst idea ever. I was asleep at my mate's house. And I could vividly remember two entities squatting down beside the bed, like this far away from my face, and they were talking to each other. It's now time to get him. It's time to take him now, lift him out of the bed. And I could physically feel hands going underneath my body, starting to raise me up. Every time before this, I was just fearful of them, didn't know what to do. At this point, fight or flight kicked in. I couldn't wake up, but my only thought was hit them, punch them, fight, kick, do something, get rid of them. At which point they heard my thoughts and said, he's awake, stop, we've got to get out. Post that, haven't had touch wood.
Dead set.
Praise Jesus, hasn't happened again.
Fuck, that's wild, bro. Wow. Man, I'm telling you, these things are real. Like in, you know, in like Jainism, they've got like real strong, and Jainism and Hinduism, they are different. I mean, look, Jains are sort of, they're a branch of Hinduism. Same as, and, you know, Buddhists will say like, oh, Hindus are a branch of Buddhism. Buddhists will, you know, Hindus will say Buddhists are a branch of Hinduism, whatever. It's all referred to as like Sanatana Dharma. It's that righteous living aspect, right? and they've got strong emphasis. And I met a bloke in Mumbai named Sumit, fucking one of the best souls, Jain, smokes a lot of pot. And he goes, we had a very, very deep esoteric conversation about like spirits, multi dimensions and stuff like that. And, you know, he's very, very well read. And he goes into deep esoteric thought about how there is dimensional gateways that allow these spirits to come in. And it's not any fault of your own. These things just exist in the world. They are there, but their sole purpose is to find and source, like it's a feeling for them to seek out minds and souls that have like lost their way from whatever means, right? Whether that's the societal fabric that we live in today, whether that's sex, whether that's drugs, whether that's addiction, whatever the case may be, how these things came into being is irrespective. They find these beings and they latch on because they get to feed off of them. And if they work correctly, and this is how they end up lingering in people for so long, is they'll grab on and they will hold, but they will manipulate slowly over time and they'll try to suck out as much delicious essence as they can. And they'll give you little treats just for being a good pet, being a good vessel, right? And over time, these little treats might make you feel like, okay, everything's going to be fine, but ultimately it doesn't. And then it ends up with the worst possible outcome. For me, the worst possible outcome, 198 kilograms in weight, playing fucking 12 to 15 hours a day of World of Warcraft. That's, for me, that was the worst. I mean,
which I can't imagine, Fozzie, because looking at you and your build now, you look like you'd be 60 kilos soaking wet. You don't look like a guy who was ever 198 kilos, my friend. I can't believe it.
Oh, dude. Yeah, well, that all sort of begun changing after mushrooms on the first time. But, yeah, these spirits, these entities, bro, they are there. And, you know, if anyone ever has sleep paralysis problems, like, I wouldn't even know how to help. For me, because for me, what begun to change it all for me was mushrooms. That's what it was for me. Like, as I said earlier, I had an exorcism. I got three witnesses to this exorcism. I blacked out. I completely blacked out while this was happening. According to them, it went on for like 15 minutes. I was like, one of my mates, Michael, he refers to it as, I was almost, to him, it looked like I was having a seizure. But to the other two, it's like, no, like my friend Alex, he was going like, bro, there was like cold, like the room got cold, like immediately. And this was, I think it was on 5 grams of mushrooms this time. This was like maybe the fifth time I'd taken them. And it was the heaviest dose that I had taken. By this stage, it was the heaviest dose that I'd taken. And after that event, that's when everything, it was almost like I could see light at the end of the tunnel. There was still a long way to go, but I could see the light. But there was a long way of walking before I could get out. So it still took time, and there was still something that was holding me back. I don't know what it was, whether it was a part and parcel of nature, whether these things were meant to happen. I couldn't tell you. It's not for me to figure out in my lifetime. Maybe, you know, maybe in another life. But yeah, I had this experience. I purchased the ticket to India. Didn't know what the fuck I was doing. Packed my fucking bags. One-way ticket, like, let's rock and roll, bro. What's the worst that's going to happen? I buy a ticket and I come back, right? I mean, look, that wasn't obviously the worst thing I was thinking about. The worst thing I was thinking about, which that night, I was getting paranoid about it when I landed into Ahmedabad, in Gujarat, where I went and met my mate.
Fuck, dude, the flight was ridiculous. It was a 19-hour flight with a 4-hour layover in Vietnam. But anyway, so get to the airport. The guy, I ended up sitting next to a guy on a plane. His name was Raj. He spoke perfect English. We ended up having a great conversation on the way from Vietnam into Ahmedabad. And he helped me he didn't get the Uber for me, but he made a call to my friend because my friend couldn't get in touch with me. Anyway, fast forward, I'm in India. First thing I do, and I'm going to go back to our previous episode about curses. So one of the reasons that I had gone to, obviously that was the main reason that I went, because that opened me up to the idea that, okay, this is going, for me, it was a spiritual experience. For me, that was a full-on spiritual experience of what I had that night. And since then, I haven't had a night terror since. I haven't had any sleep paralysis since. I haven't had any difficulty sleeping since. And I'm more sort of, I guess, in tune with myself in some way, shape, and form. but after having conversations and knowing about my family history, is that there was definitely generational curse. And
rather,
I know that might. Yeah.
No, this is what Vicky Joy in that episode spoke about. A lot of people that have this, it can be, like we said, it could be the modern world we live in, all the earthly things, the desires, the seven deadly sins type of approach. Yep. We're kind of hooked into that mechanism, that system. But a lot of people don't realize they have multi-generational curses they don't know how to break.
Yeah, dude, they exist. They truly exist, man. Once you recognize karma, like once you recognize this idea of consequence from action, and you also understand that if genetics get passed down, it's not out of the realm of possibility that other things get passed down as well. If you believe memories and stuff get passed down, right, then it's a hop, skip, and a jump from generational curses.
Well, this is what Vicky put out so eloquently, is that if you had an ancestor who was, say, I don't know, in some kind of satanic occult type of group, and they gave over themselves, their being, to some kind of entity that can give them riches and power and all the things they wanted in this earthly realm, but they're tied to it. It's not just them. It's their genetic lineage which is tied to it, because they pass it on through.
Well, I'll go into like the sort of, I guess, the dialectics of that briefly. I'm not going to say my surname on fucking on the podcast, because I know what'll happen. It's a very unique surname.
Wait, it's not Aussie with two Zs?
It is. I feel it's actually lied Aussie. To. It's Aussie with three Zs, and there's like an apostrophe on the E at the end that makes it French. So it's Aussie. You know, like, really old French family lineage. Goes back at least 600 years. That's as far back as I can trace it. Going to Eastern France, my family worked under King... one of the King Louis, I think it was King Louis the 11th and prior. there's like Gallic sort of ancestry in there. And they operated an area where there's a river, and they were charged by the king or the monarchy to, like many other aristocratic families, to stop the sort of like invasions of foreign nations coming in. So for my family, they were charged with stopping like Germanic tribes from crossing the river into like, you know, French territory. Fast forward like sort of 200 years later, somewhere there, this is coming up to the, or post, no, sorry, coming up to the French Revolution. My family with a bunch of other families were tasked with searching out for new territory or new lands, like, you know, merchants and new sort of territories for France to make more money. So my family was given a ship and a crew, along with 8 other households, or it might be 11 other households, but I think it's 8, and sailed down the coast of Africa. And came to the Madagascan Islands. So Madagascar, Mauritius, Reunion Island. And yeah, my family and the other families were the first people to settle in Mauritius from the French. And they've been there sort of ever since. Still there till this day. We've been in like sugarcane industry and stuff like that. But where the generational curse comes in, which this is going to be, yeah, anyway, it involves the death of my father and stuff like that. It's very strange how these things sort of played out. But my family participated in the Indian slave trade. They didn't directly bring slaves in from India, But at a time, this is later down the line. This is like, you know, after Australia had been colonized, and, you know, Matthew Flinders, for example, my family, was it Matthew Flinders?
Rather, the poetry that exists in your family history is just serendipitous and ironic that now you're coming back to an idea of understanding Indian culture
it's so weird, dude, because all these things about my family, I've only found out in the last like sort of 4 or 5 years. I think my grandmother, unfortunately, she's suffering from some short-term memory dementia. Her long-term memory is still there, but her short-term's like now it's on the fritz. And I think that in the last sort of 5 years, she may have known, and she wanted to give me like an extensive history of the family. So we went over books, ledgers, like full-on business transactions and everything. And yeah, so the English were the ones that brought they were classified as indentured servants, were brought over from Mumbai, funnily enough. And they worked on the sugarcane plantations that my family operated. Like there was other families that also did the same thing. My family was one of three families that operated not just in Mauritius, but also in South Africa. but I don't know the entire history of what had happened, but whatever had happened during the time of my family's operations, and my family got very filthy fucking rich, filthy rich off of sugarcane. Whatever happened during that time, and I can imagine money, jewelry, gems, ego, sex, drugs, alcohol, sugar, everything. I'm sure a shit wouldn't surprise me if one of my fucking ancestors either raped one of the women or fucking killed someone or did something. From everything my grandmother has told me and shown me, the Indian individuals that worked on the plantations were actually treated well. Each of them had their own accommodation. They had their own meals that were prepared for them. Like they were well looked after. But at the end of the day, they still worked for my family. So whatever had happened, I don't know. But fast forward to 2023. I hope it's not the last line of my line, but you know, here we are in India, and at this stage, I've figured out after having my birth charts done that I actually have a generational curse. So I had a deep birth chart spread done. So like a Hindu astrology, essentially Vedic astrology. Mine was very complicated. It took about 6 weeks for the individual to complete. We had a webcam chat on Zoom, went for about 3 hours. We went over everything, and he's pulling out time periods of my life and what had happened to me, or what was happening to me in a sort of broader sense. Bro, I was getting chills the entire time. And then after we went over my history, then we went into the future. Now, there's things in there that I'm not going to discuss. However, one of the things that came with that is my generational curse and sort of what I have to do based on my time of birth, the place of my birth, like where I am sort of localized, north, south, east, west, longitude, latitude, all these things. I had to participate in some rituals. So one of the first things I had to do, and I had to do these all before the 14th of October. So the 14th of October in Hinduism is called Navratri, which is 9 days commencing of worship of the divine feminine. And each day is to worship to it. Each day is a worship of a different divine feminine, but they ultimately all represent the same thing. And then after that, then Diwali happens.
I've got to say something. I'm sorry.
Go. I'm going to roll a cigarette anyway. That's all right. You haven't cut it off. No, go.
There's so many parallels with what you're saying. It doesn't seem like we're living the same lives, but there's a lot of rhyming going on here. You're talking about multi-generational curses.
Yeah.
And your idea of the connection with the French. My ancestry is somewhat similar. My ancestors were Danes who were sacking and pillaging Britain.
That's it. France. Fuck, bro. Dude, I just got chills.
Ended up being the Normans. My That's ancestor it. Was William the Conqueror's right-hand general, Fuck. Who was in charge of the invasion of Britain. My ancestors became noblemen. We have a town named after us in England.
Yeah.
And what I consider to be the start of that multi-generational curse is one of my ancestors, the nobleman of his land and his area and his holdings, had two sons,
yep.
two twin boys, who, of course, one didn't go to the church for whatever reason, one didn't go to the army, which is tradition. They both decided they wanted the land and the holdings, And the father decided on his deathbed that no one would get it, and he gave all his land and title to the people,
Fuck.
To the peasantry.
Dead
set. So I think in a lot of ways, he was trying to break the own generational curse.
100%. Yep.
Didn't
for
quite
sure.
worked. The sons ended up retaining some power, a little bit wealthier than others. They ended up becoming farmers, quite big land owners, farmers in Britain. They lost that again. They came to Australia, their ancestors further down the line. Again, yep. Two brothers on their way to Australia. One of the brothers' wives died on the way here.
Fuck.
They had a major falling out when they arrived. One stayed in Victoria, one went to South Australia.
Man. They're true. They're real, bro. I don't give a fuck what anyone says, mate. I've lived it, bro. You've lived it. Obviously, you know, what's her name? I wrote it down, episode 34. What's the lady's name that was talking about the...
Vicky Joy Anderson.
Vicky Joy Anderson. I'm going to watch that. I've written it down, episode 34.
She's written a fantastic book. They only come out at night, which is all about sleep paralysis, shadow figures, demonic curses, all those types of things. And she goes into that a great amount of depth of that sometimes it may not actually be demonic. Sometimes it may be humans, say, dark entities within the government who are kind of transcending their consciousness to you to kind of harass you and
like
make you go
projection.
Crazy. Astral projection.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
at times when you utter the words Jesus Christ's name to protect you, sometimes it doesn't work. If it doesn't work, they have to be a very human nature thing that's in the room.
I wonder if I've ever had like a female government worker like try and like get into my mind like astral projection. I wonder what a chick like that would be called. Maybe like Bethany. Maybe like Margaret, like maybe Fran or like Karen or something. I'm not really too sure. But either way, the generational curse is fucking real. And one of the things that had happened was like, oh, that's right. So I had to do these rituals. I had to visit some temples. I had to visit two temples specifically. One of the temples, well, both temples I had to do rituals, but one was more complicated than the other one. So the first place I went to was Nasik. Nasik is a city in the state of Maharashtra where Mumbai resides in. It's about 150 kilometers sort of east, northeast of Mumbai. And in Nasik is one of the Jyotirlings. There's 12 Jyotirlings in India. In the Shiva Puranas, one of the older Hindu texts, there originally was 64, I believe, but now there's only 12. And these are incredibly old sites. They unfortunately, some of them have gone under many demolitions, or sorry, demolitions is not the term because that's intentional. Well, it still is intent, but the Jyotirlings, some of the Jyotirlings have been destroyed many times by the sort of like Mughal invasions, the Turkic invasions, the Portuguese as well. But most of them have been destroyed on numerous accounts from like Mughal invasions, sort of more so than the others. but these sites represent this aspect of not just Hinduism, I think, but this sense of self. So I went to this temple and I met a couple of people from Twitter there. So one of them's Radhik, one of the guys from the Hindu community, works for Deloitte. We had a long, extensive conversation and we went to the Jyotirling. And I had to do a what they call a puja, which is just like a basic sort of ritual. You know, you can. There's more extended versions of it, but there's very basic versions of it. So I did this particular like sort of puja before I went to the Trimbakeshwar. Sorry, not Trimbakeshwar. Yeah, the Trimbakeshwar Jyotirling. get in. The moment I walked into the temple and this place, the base, bro. You know how we talk about like the, you know, Temple of Jupiter and stuff like that, and like the, you know, the what are those megalithic blocks called? The Trilithon stones, like the sort of layer in the base of like the Temple of Jupiter in Lebanon and stuff like that. This, the base, which included the lingam, incredibly old, bro, beyond what someone would say. Like this, anyway, I get in there, bro, the moment I walk through those doors. And that, mind you, there's a central chamber as well. There's the main temple, and then there's a central chamber where the Shivalingam is. The moment I walked through the door, I immediately felt a vibration. I don't know what it was. It's hard to describe it, but as I'm approaching the inner chamber, and there's a queue of people,
But as I'm approaching the inner chamber and I've got in my hand an offering, worship, which consists of some flowers, some seeds, and a few other things as well.
Did this place happen to be built of granite, or do you know what the stones made?
The floor.
So it's high quartz content.
The floor and the lingam I'm pretty sure is built of granite. The walls are built of basalt. Okay. It's not all one singular piece, but as I said, the outer walls, so the actual top of the temple or the walls and stuff, that has been destroyed a bunch of times. Like in Gujarat, there's the Somnath Jyotirling as well. That had been destroyed like 17 times, but the original base is still there. Not on the major temple now. It's right next to it, but you can at least experience the original site. So yeah, I give what they call darshan, which is the offering, the worship, or the offering, sorry. I give the darshan and I sort of just ask myself, ask the universe for like sort of strength and fortitude, like while I'm here. And when I walk out, bro, I just break down crying. I don't even know what overcame me, bro. Like the moment I walked out and that vibration had stopped, I just started crying and I was hot. Yeah. Like my whole body was hot, but not, I wasn't sweating. I was just warm, like my whole body, and I just broke down crying, bro. I cried for like 10-15 minutes.
That just screams a resonant frequency and your molecules rubbing together, right, and creating friction and heat.
Later down the track, before I came back to Australia, I went to my third Jyotirling by this stage, which is called the Grineshwar Jyotirling. You have to take your shirt off, so men aren't allowed to wear their shirts inside the temple. There's something mechanical that's below. There's something mechanical that's below that temple, and that temple hasn't been destroyed as many. I don't even know if it's been destroyed, to be completely honest with you. It's so old. It's exactly the same as the Nasik one, but I didn't register this mechanism until I was at that one, because that one was a lot quieter than the in terms of just people there and whatnot, as opposed to the one that I went to. And they do round the clock puja, like on the Shivalingam. It involves milk and honey and other things as well. It involves fire. It involves water, ghee. So like clarified butter. It involves a whole host of things. Anyway, so I do this ritual. The next order of business is to go from central India to eastern India. So I go to the state of Andhra Pradesh, to a place called Tirupati. And Tirupati's got some very famous temples. There's a temple in Tirupati that's made entirely out of gold. I didn't go and visit it, but they do a television show in India where every morning, like for breakfast, they have people doing worship on the temple and the whole temple's made out of gold. I'll find the name of the temple. I'll let you know so you can look it up, but I don't know what it is right now. Anyway, next to Tirupati is a town called, I say next to, but it was an hour drive, called Srikalahasti. And in Srikalahasti, there's the major temple complex there, which I think originally was intended to be a place for warriors, spiritual warriors. So in this temple, there's these massive granite pillars that complete. It's like this. It's a. How would you describe it? The temple's built like a massive lattice structure. So it's huge amounts of pillars that litter the site or the actual temple complex. It almost has a history added to it as well. It shows you like almost like the creation of different styles of lingams. They've got this at the site. But what I went there for was to get a puja done called a Rahu Ketu Puja. Rahu and Ketu in Hinduism are ethereal planets. So these ethereal planets align with your birth and they sort of dictate and determine the nature of your reality and how it's going to sort of unfold. And these play a heavy role in terms of curses. So for me to wipe that generational curse, I had to do this Rahul Ketu Puja, and it involves sitting with some other people, and it involves flower. It involves like I mentioned before, there's a few things that are involved. There's a pundit or a Hindu priest, that goes through this ritual from a vocal sense. He's speaking Sanskrit. And while this ritual's happening, and I'm like, you know, there's like red okra, there's turmeric involved, there's lotus flowers involved, and you're putting these into this pile and stuff like that. And I didn't know what was going on, bro. I had no fucking idea, but I was participating in it. And mind you, in Andhra Pradesh, no one speaks English. No one speaks fucking Hindi in English. So I couldn't even get by on Hindi. I could get by on Namaste, But that was about it by this stage. Like, I couldn't even speak any Hindi, bro. Namaste and Dhanyavad, meaning thank you. That was it. halfway into this ritual, I started getting angry. And I got fucking furious. All I've got around me, I've got 1,000 Indians. And not just brown Indians. I'm talking black Indians, like southern, like south like Indian.
Dravidian type Indians?
Full on Dravidian, like looks Aboriginal. Thousands of bro, I'm surrounded by thousands of these people in queues to go and do worship at the central chamber. And where I was situated was between all that. So everyone that's walking past can see. And you've just got thousands of Indians that are walking through this while this is ongoing, just seeing this Gaura, meaning white. Like that's Gaura just means white, but they refer to everyone that's white in India generally as Gauras. So they're seeing this white Gaura or this Gaura, this Australian Gaura, doing this ritual. Everyone's fascinated, but I'm getting paranoid, bro. I'm getting paranoid and angry, yeah? And I'm starting to get like real dark thoughts. I'm seeing children. I'm like, I want to fucking beat that kid up. I'm seeing old ladies looking at me. I want to beat that fucking old lady up. Dude, like demonic thoughts about hurting people here in this place that by this stage, I'd already been looking at the pillars because there was like a 30-minute cool down period between the previous Rahul Ketu Puja that was done and the one that I participated in. So I was already in that site and I was already looking at all the pillars. All the pillars have got intricate carvings of people holding bows and arrows and shooting animals and swords fighting and just imagery of war, essentially, and imagery of soldiers battle, essentially, completely in the site. And I got incredibly angry throughout it.
Brother, you were in your own spiritual battle right then. Dude, what I'm gleaming from all of this is that whatever entity, curse, what have you, whatever you want to call this thing, this darkness that was attached to you and your family, it was on its last throes for life in your body, your system. It was grabbing on for the last vestiges of its own survival, and its way of survival is getting you to lash out.
And when it had finally gone, which happened... And this is, I don't want any listeners to think this is dark. No one understands the level of complexity it comes to the nature of their relationships with their parents. But my relationship with my father is very, very complex. And it's not a great history. I'm not going to go into all the dialectics of it all. But basically, I've got daddy issues, more or less, like if I'm just to carry it up to something. And not really anymore. But anyway, did. So fast forward. I've gone back to Ahmedabad. Oh, no, fuck, didn't even talk about the Buddhist case. We'll come back to that. We'll quickly just talk about the curse. So fast forward my entire experiences that I had during India. Now I'm in Mumbai. And mind you, I wasn't even meant to be in Mumbai for long. I was only meant to be in Mumbai for 2 hours as a layover to go to Hyderabad because I was meant to meet up with someone in Hyderabad. And the fucker didn't like actually give me any times or where he's going to be. He just gave me a date. So I'd booked the ticket because I'm like, you can't be bullshitting, right? Like we're going to meet up. We're going to have a good time. We're going to go vlog. We're going to see this. We're going to see that. He never got back in touch with me. So I said, fuck it. I'm going to stay in Mumbai. I want to see it. Why not? So I was in Mumbai. Bro, the day I got into Mumbai, I started getting sick. This is 3 months into my trip, I drank river water, tap water, ate from rural areas, didn't get sick, like went to places that most Westerners wouldn't even dream of going to. I didn't get sick at all. Moment I stepped foot into Mumbai, bro, something was off.
It's ironic that your ancestors' slaves came from Correct. That region of India and it's tied to that physical location.
Yep. But I didn't know. By this stage, I knew I'd had Indian slaves. I didn't know that they came from Mumbai until I got back to Australia and then ended up having a sit-down conversation with my uncle, my grandmother, and my auntie Genevieve. We had this long, extensive conversation. Shout out to my auntie Genevieve for fucking keeping fucking track and record of the entire family history. She said, no, we got the Indian slaves from... the indentured servants, she referred to them as indentured servants, from Mumbai. And I just chills, bro, just ran. I knew straight away, like, this is my dad, bro. Third day in to Mumbai. And this was like, by this stage and this third day in, I was sick. I'd completely lost my voice, right? Cold sweats, hot sweats. I had like almost like flu-like symptoms in some regard. And I honestly thought it was like COVID, I'm like, bro, I feel like shit. I feel like dog shit. I've got like bad thoughts as well. Yeah. Like I'm angry. I'm upset. I don't want to be in this city. I remember making a post on Twitter about it. I'm like, Mumbai's a fucking cursed city. Why the fuck would people want to live here? La, 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 la. I was furious, bro. Couldn't really figure out why, because, you know, at the same time, I'm going and seeing these like rock cut caves, you know, that are in Mumbai, and I was interested in them. So I was like separating my sort of consciousness into sort of two faucets. By the fifth day, I get a call, and I had already, by this stage, I'd gone to the Jogeshwari Caves, I think it was, or Canary Caves, one of the two. And by this stage, I came back to the hostel. I left my, because I had my Australian phone and I had my iPhone that had the Indian number on it. Obviously, I took that out to take the photos. I left my Android back at the hostel. And I get to the hostel, open up my phone. Missed call from uncle, 3 missed calls from my uncle, 4 missed calls from my mum. I knew straight away, bro. I knew straight away before even having the fucking phone call that my dad had died. I fucking knew it, bro. And I called my mum. She's crying. I knew. I said, fuck, how did it happen? She goes, we think he had a heroin overdose. I'm like, fuck, bro. So obviously I had to get my shit together and come back to Australia. There was nothing that could be done at that particular time because the coroner wasn't ready to release the body because it was a legal there's actually a criminal investigation on this right now. They're actually tracking an Afghani looking bloke in Melbourne who's been peddling heroin, and they've been catching him on cameras and stuff like that because this guy got my dad's wallet and had been spending money on his fucking card. Get that. So we got I went to the Westpac bank, got all the transaction records and stuff, gave it to the police. Now they've turned into a massive, like massive investigation, like on drug trafficking. Like they're trying to get like all these guys involved. I don't know. It's massive. But anyway, when this had happened that same day, I went to the Sri Siddhi Vinayak temple in Mumbai, which is the largest Ganesh temple in India. I was in the queue to get into the inner temple for hours, bro. Hours. I was so pumped up to go to this temple, bro. When I got to the sort of central chamber where you give an offering, I felt nothing. I felt absolutely nothing. I'm like, and by this stage, bro, I'd already been to 2 Jyotirlings. I'd already had these experiences, these sort of like spiritual experiences, these feelings of energy and stuff like that. And I go into this Ganesh temple, I feel absolutely nothing. And I get out and I'm fucking fuming, bro. And the next day, shit. And then on that fifth day, then I, you know, sort of subsequently find out that my father's passed away. But 2 days prior, the day I went to that Ganesh temple is the day he actually died. Because the next, that he had been literally laying in the grass at the back of some apartment complex in one of the suburbs in southeast Melbourne. I'll say the suburb was Springvale for anyone that's a fucking Melbourne listener. Just in the back of some apartment complex, bro, dead in the fucking grass. And then someone just walked past and just like called. And it's shit, you know, it's shit to have to get that phone call from your parent or anyone. And that's the explanation of how he died. I'm like, bro.
Dude, I'm so sorry that's happened to you.
It's fine, man.
Can I ask a question? I don't mean shoot. To offend or
hurt. No, of course.
Asking this question. We know that these multi-generational curses exist. Whatever's behind them has a desire to stay in this realm, to keep feeding, to endure. Do you think through your process of possibly trying to rid yourself or your family of this curse, this entity, whatever it was, lashed out?
And like in terms of like lashing out on my father?
Just on your family line, yeah. Is that something that's ever gone through your head at all?
Not necessarily. I guess maybe in some way, shape or form, if we were to talk about, I mean, we'd have to get into the dialectics of what a curse could be. But my feeling was that in order for the curse to sort of stop, cease to exist, so the next generation doesn't have to deal with it. And I'm blessed. Now I'm an uncle, and now I've got a beautiful little nephew. And I pray that what I did bolsters him and gives him a life that both me and my brother never got to experience, that my dad somewhat tried to experience, but fall flat on his face, and then like the previous lines. So my granddad on my dad's side got diabetes, severe diabetes, was a heavy alcoholic, very, he wasn't abusive to my grandmother, but in some ways he was. I mean, he used to fuck prostitutes like in the next room, like all my grandmother's asleep. This is like French aristocrat mindset. And this is what I'm talking about. That, you know, they're like hedonistic fucking pigs, bro. Like, I just got all this fucking money. Wine, fucking cheese, croissants, Viagra, just fucking your way. You got all this fucking money. You do whatever you want. That mentality set in with my line. And I think that that in and of itself was the curse. It was that curse of fucking multidimensional curse, lust, greed, envy, sloth, whatever, the whole thing. And it seemed like, it feels like it's been lifted since my dad's passing in its whole form, not just for me, but also for my brother. And also for my mum, and hopefully also, obviously my mum's not my fucking, you know, obviously my mum's not related to my fucking dad, but like, obviously bringing kids into the world is like part and parcel. Like, they both play a role, divine feminine, divine masculine, all this and that.
I hope I'm not speaking out of turn in this, and that you've done what you believe through the things you've seen, you've experienced, is a way of ridding yourself of this family curse, removing it from your family line.
Yeah, yeah.
I would like to think that, you know, your father had his own demons, his own battles by the sounds of it. Many, you know, no one's many. Perfect. That in some way, because this thing was going on in India while he passed, maybe there's a glimpse or a skerrick that your father, whatever happened, he helped in some way ridding that curse of your family. Dude, as well. There's some kind of personal sacrifice in there.
Those demons?
Was maybe unintentional.
Maybe, bro. And, you know, I was, it's funny you even mentioned that, because like the last couple of months before I went to India, last two, maybe 3 months, maybe even 4 months, to be honest, it's kind of a bit of a blur now, but I was spending more time with my dad. So my grandfather, like I mentioned, had diabetes. He lost both his legs. So this is before insulin, right? So they took one leg to give him more time. Then they took the other leg to give him more time. Then he was in a box. My dad, he was starting to have problems with his legs. His legs were swelling up. He was getting poor blood flow that was happening in his legs. He was, mind you, he was consuming copious amounts of sugar, brother. Like, he wasn't looking after his body. He was severely depressed. It was like he was a husk. Like, despite the many conversations that I tried to have with him about choice and consequence and this and that, it's like nothing sunk. It was like, in one ear and out the other, like I couldn't get through. But I did what I felt was necessary at the time, and that is, I need, even though he's never been there for me, I still need to try and help him out, because by this stage, obviously, you know, I'm wearing the mala beads and whatnot. By this stage, I'd already, like, sort of my mind or my sort of spiritual acumens had already sort of shifted more into like sort of Hinduism than anything. So, and obviously coming part and parcel with that is like good moral decisions, good moral outcomes, karma, all this and that. And so I took him to the hospital. Mind you, he got three jabs. But I was spending a lot of time with him, and I wonder, like, maybe those entities, if they are, maybe they're like attached onto him to keep feeding while I was gone. But it's not like I was out of the woods when I got to India. Like, there was a lot of weird synchronistic things that happened. I met beautiful people, but then I also like was tested a few times, like in my own mental fortitude and physically in the actual physical environment as well. Like, that day I went to the Sri Kalahasti Mandir, which sort of like cleansed my karma. So what this was essentially, this sort of like trilogy of wiping karma was more so to cleanse mine, at the same time stabilizing the generational line. However, it seems like the passing of my dad that happened while I was in Mumbai has like lifted just the weight, not just off myself, but also off of my brother. I mean, he definitely suffered after my dad's passing, no doubt, but he's more clear-headed now than what he was. You know, he's completely adamant. He's like, he's basically stopped doing drugs, which is positive. I mean, he's got a son now, so you'd fucking hope so anyway. But it all seemed to fall into play at the same time. You know, like, people look at things like, oh, that's just a coincidence, bro. no such fucking thing as
there are no coincidences.
Mate. There's bullshit.
There are no coincidences.
Once you start seeing synchronistic things happening, like once you're able to analyze something that is synchronistic, something that seems like it's a coincidence, but if you've got a sort of greater perspective on spirituality, and that goes, it doesn't matter what faucet that is, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Hinduism, whatever, you truly start to see like almost like the fabric of reality start to unfold before your eyes. It's very strange.
Coincidence is just the human word we give to universal or godlike plans and predetermined destiny that we don't understand, as far as I'm concerned.
No, I 100% agree. I think it's all like nature of reality. I think you don't have any control over it, bro. People like make decisions and then like what? Then they don't even realize the decision that they made. Whether that's good or bad is irrespective, bro. Like people go like, oh, you know, I'm going to go apply for this job. Oh, you got this job now. They fucking hate this job. You know, they, something happens in their life and had like, they did a particular action and had a very positive outcome, not just unto themselves, but also to their friends and stuff like that. It consistently happens. So yeah, this sort of wiping of my curse happened after during Sri Kailasa. I was very, very angry. I get out the front of the temple. There's a guy that comes up to me. This man's like 4'8", like tiny little guy. And he looked like just this little weasel, like this little evil weasel character. Like I was just getting the feeling that he was trying to stitch me up. You know, he basically tried to express like, where do you want to go? And I'm like, Tirupati. He's like, come with me, come with me. But as he's saying, come with me, two of his mates rock up. And I'm like analyzing these guys. These guys like double his fucking height. And I'm like, I'm getting real like Home Alone vibes. I'm getting real like I'm going to get like taken down the side of a street and beaten the fuck out of vibes. And I'm like, and I just lose. And I'm already aggressive, bro. I'm already angry. I've already just been on the phone to my mate about it. He's laughing at me on the phone, bro. He's like, I knew this would fucking happen. Like him and his mate that like did my astrology, like they had many conversations about like what's going to happen to Fozzie at this particular place. And they determined that I would just get fucking aggressive and angry. And I did, bro. I was furious and I just fucking yelled it and I pushed this little weasel out the way. I'm get the fuck out of here. The security guard's right at the front of the temple. Bro, I'm literally at the front of the temple. The security guards come over, bro, and they're like, one of them speaks English. He's like, what's the problem? Like this little fucking weasel, bro. He's trying to get me. He's trying to stitch me up. He's tells these guys to move along. And after they leave, this beautiful soul comes out of nowhere in a tuk-tuk in a rickshaw. And he's like, where do you want to go, my friend? And I'm like, I want to go to Tirupati. He's like, get in. I'm like, done. And I got a good vibe from him straight away. He's got music pumping on the radio and the little tuk-tuk. I'm like, yes, bro. Get in. Kick him back. I've got the tilak on because I've got all like the stuff that was, you know, all the ochre and stuff that's on my forehead. 500 meters out from the site, bro. Maybe not 500 meters, but either way, once I was left that site, that anger, that furiousness dropped. Gone like that, completely gone. And after that, I was adamant that the next stage of my sort of journey of development is going to involve like Buddhist rock cut fucking caves. Because after Nasik, when I went to the Trimbakeshwar temple, my friend Radik told me to check out the Nasik caves or the Pandavleni caves. And bro, I didn't know what to expect. There was a Wikipedia that I like briefly looked at, but there's no photos. There's a couple of photos up there, bro. There's nothing. I go in. It's these massive basalt rock cut caves that are carved out the side of this hill. I go to the first one. And what's the first thing that I see? Not immediately. I sat in the room for a while and it's like, it's all carved. It's all like groove cuts. Like what you would imagine, like ancient architect style, like, you know, like, oh, high-powered machinery. How was this crafted? I go in, I sit, I chill out. I'm like, bro, this is like a cool little place. And as I'm walking out the first cave, I spot on my left, bro, there's this massive tubular bore drill mark that's all the way down the side of one of these pillars. And it's old, yeah? Like, it's not like it's fresh, not in the last 50 years. This thing looks as old as the rock. And I'm like, holy fuck. And then I'm looking around the cave and I start spotting them up on the walls and shit. I'm like, oh my God. And it was completely happenstance. So I started checking out the other caves and I start seeing these similarities that are across the entire site. One of those was access to water. So all the caves I've been to since all have underground aquifers, which on first inspection, I go, okay, so they had whoever built these had an understanding of hydrology, how to find underground aquifers. You know, rain comes in, seeps into the ground, builds out sort of underground wells. But they knew how to find these. And as I'm going through, I'm seeing all these like construction methods, these squared off punched holes in the walls. And I'm like, you know, that looks like the bolting systems you use for scaffolding. These hook and loop systems. So they're like loops that have been like carved into the rock. I'm still not sure what they're for, possibly for the scaffolding or something like that as well. But like, as I'm going around, bro, then they've got these stupas, these big bulbous objects in Buddhism that are like divine. They're divine in Buddhism, you know? And I'm going across all these caves, bro, and I become obsessed with what I'm seeing. I don't know what it was. I'm seeing this iconography of this, imagine like a semicircle, and at the top of the semicircle, there's like this, almost like imagine like a light emanating upwards at the top of the semicircle. So I'm starting to see that symbology everywhere outside of the Buddhas that are like, you know, carved into the walls and stuff like that. And purely, even when I did my vlog, it was purely observational. Like I knew barely an inch about Buddhist mythology or Hindu mythology or anything like that. My experience is going to these caves purely observational. And as I'm going around to all these caves, I'm seeing the same thing at every single fucking cave. I'm seeing the same rock type at every single cave. I'm seeing the same uniform groove marks, the same construction methods with the bolting systems, the hook systems. But then at each cave, they've got something very unique, unlike what the other cave has. And it's mainly around the construction. So like at the Nasik caves, they've got these, and they're outside as well, these tubular bore drill marks. But I didn't see those tubular bore drill marks until I was in Mumbai, and then I only saw them at one of the caves, and then when I was in Aurangabad at one of the other caves. But also, what goes into all these caves is the similarities of energy, the similarities of these rooms that they carve out. And bro, I should have shown you a photo. There's an iconography of a Buddhist stupa that has, and this was at the Nasik caves. And when I first saw it, bro, I got chills on the back of my fucking spine. And it's this stupa that has what look like pipes, three like pipes coming out of the top. And at the top of these pipes is chhatras. And chhatras in Buddhism is umbrellas. they have a deeper esoteric meaning. They sort of, it almost represents like the peak of life and essence, like getting, you know, similar, like achieving moksha, like something like that, achieving that sort of enlightenment.
So just quickly,
yeah.
How is there an estimated date on how long ago these caves were carved out?
Yeah. So no one knows. There's no definitive answer on the carvings of caves, but there's definitive answers on the occupation of the caves. So at the oldest period of occupation, we go to 250 BC. That's at the earliest occupation. The latest occupation goes roughly around like 150 AD. And that's the occupation of Buddhist monks. Now, all these sites, or a lot of these sites in Maharashtra, were gifts to the locals from Ionian merchants, Indo-Greek merchants that existed in certain areas in India. Obviously, you know, you had
Alexander the Great went through and
correct. Yep. You had that sort of rise. Yeah, dude, northern Pakistan. You had like the region of Kandara and Taxila, like the Buddhist iconography, the Greco Buddhist iconography. And while I was there, I went to
You are an absolute bastard, because we're going to have more conversations about this. It's just drawing my mind in like it was when I was, I don't know, early 20s watching Ancient Aliens, that these huge, like the monolithic structures, the cave work, the, like you said, directal boral drilling that you're seeing,
I'll
these
tell you
things
what
you're
I,
noticing.
Look, I'll tell you what I personally
amazing.
Think it is. I'll tell you what
Thank
I personally
you.
Think
Thank you. That's what I want you to close the show on.
Yeah, yeah.
What,
no, fair
what's
enough.
Your
we could talk
Who
about that
built
more.
These things?
I think, this is my personal view, the original structures, which are the Kailasa complex as well, and many other Buddhist rock cut caves, all built from granite and basalt. The Pandavas came and restored them, right? And I didn't know about this until I went to Kala Caves in a place called Lonavala. I met an ex-politician that operates the site, and he told me that the Pandavas, who are the brothers in the Mahabharat, came to this site and they had a vision. They had a spirit vision, like a mother goddess came to them and told them about these caves and to restore them and repair them. So they stored and repaired the site at Kala Caves, and I suspect they did the same at all the other caves. So what I've found and what I've actually got right here is actual geopolymer samples. And I didn't start noticing the geopolymer samples until I was in Mumbai. And when I was in Mumbai, I went to Canary Caves and I knock. And if you watch my video that I've got up now, right, at Fozzy the Aussie, AUZZIE, at the Canary Caves, I see the same rock type that I've seen at the other caves that I had already suspected by this stage was a geopolymer. And I guess what I do, bro, I go up and I don't know what compelled me. I just knocked it. The whole thing's hollow at the site. I'm like, what the fuck? Blew my mind. And then I'm going around to the other sites and I'm seeing the same thing. So all these sites, I believe, are made from the same people, the original structure, as opposed to the geopolymer, which I think came at a later date from the Pandavas. So I suspect they had, the ancient Indians definitely had a great deep knowledge of how to make geopolymers. Sample right here. However, the original structures, I personally believe, were intended to be massive piezoelectric generators using the downward force of mountains. Yeah, get this. The downward force of mountains and sacred geometry in order to direct that native force into that sacred geometry in order to generate piezoelectricity. So spheres, right? When force is put into a sphere, that force is distributed evenly. These pyramid, these stupas in ancient India have on top of them these pyramidal structures that run upwards. And at some of the sites in Aurangabad caves, you actually see, I actually genuinely show you, and most people never got to see it because I got special privilege, special white man privilege, access into an area that no one normally gets to access. And in the roof, these stupas are built into the ceiling of the rock to force, to channel that force down into these stupas. And some of them, you can actually see the drill marks. And I actually show you the actual bore drill marks that go into the ceilings and how these things were cut out. And I truly suspect what the intention of these sites were to be originally, and these probably go back to Atlantis, if I'm being completely honest with you out there, is these were intended to be massive piezoelectric generators, but on a scale that, on a scale that generates enough energy for not a planet, but enough energy for a society to thrive within. So I would envision, essentially imagine shearing a line all the way through a mountain range. Just envision just a simple rudimentary mountain. It doesn't need to be anything specific.
Nazca.
Slice that mountain in half, lift it slightly up, and then layer in all these stupas all the way through it. And all that energy is being channeled down into these, and all these stupas across all these caves have got massive plug holes in them. And one of the things that's used in India for transference of electricity and is also used in many commercial applications in the West is what they call Multani Mitti or bentonite clay. And bentonite clay has a unique property where it's able to transfer electricity through itself. And I suspect that this was probably used in these in order to pull and draw the piezoelectric charge out of the granite into these, you know, into whatever fashion, how to ever generate it. I suspect it might have been water, actually pulling electricity into water. And then somehow, I'm still working my thoughts on that particular section.
Plug your iPhone in?
Yeah, to plug your iPhone in, essentially. I'm still working out how that sort of participates because there's a lot of unique things that that's at many of these sites that make me wonder. But anyway, yeah, so that's what my thoughts are. I think these are massive piezoelectric generators from a time long past, and they just happened to exist in India and they were left there. Mind you, there was a massive ice corridor that disconnected the Indus Valley, right, from the rest of Europe for a very, very long time. We're talking right on the northern edges of Pakistan today into Afghanistan. There was a massive ice wall going back into the fucking Younger Dryas and the beginnings of the Holocene, and that began to melt away. And during these sort of periods of, like, let's say 7,000 to 5,000 years ago, This is when these periods of the Aryan invasions and stuff like that begun to exist. So I truly believe these sites in India, not all the caves, some of the caves in Mumbai, so there's the Jogeshwari and Mahakali caves, these were built in an earlier time. But some of these caves were definitely built in an earlier period, and I genuinely believe they were from the time periods of Atlantis, for sure.
This rings true of like every megalithic society and culture that you kind of experience around the ancient world, whether that's a new world in Latin America, Britain, Europe, where have you. These places, wherever they're built, they seem to be harnessing some kind of an energy source, a natural energy source from each of them. The cultures and the people that modern day academia attributes to them seem to be people who have stumbled across, walked over these places, kind of adopted them as their own, kind of just, you know, set up shop with the new renters, the new tenants.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know who the original builders were. Correct. They're just finally finished the show off.
Yeah.
Do you come from, because there's a big, big theological, spiritual, scientific debate going on with these things within the conspiracy theory realm, that were these aliens? Were these advanced humans and we've since lost our way and lost our knowledge? Was it somewhat metaphysical, spiritual, with some kind of, for lack of a better word, God or fallen angel intervention? Where do you sit on any of those topics?
Yeah, I think it was humans. I mean, you just look at the last 200 years of what we've developed as technology, irrespective of whatever it is. It could be something as simple as a glass bottle, or as complicated as an iPhone. It doesn't matter.
Like, we're still using crystals. What do you think?
We're still using crystals.
We're looking on a black screen right now.
And these sites, Kailasa Temple is an example, and the Aurangabad caves and stuff like that, they've all got quartz crystals interlating the sculptures, interlating the entire site. They're interlating the meditation rooms, and bro, the vibration in these rooms will send you fucking wild. And just thinking how they cut quartz. Quartz is harder than granite. Quartz is harder than granite. I know.
Brother, need diamond cut.
Dude.
Tools to cut through
so
that.
So the fact that they could even carve quartz, just looking at it that way, like people go, oh, you know, you can carve granite with steel and water. For sure, bro. But the quartz that you're cutting is so minute that it ends up getting like dislodged. It does. If the quartz, the micro quartz crystals that are in granite, they don't get sliced. But anyway, I'll end up taking up too much time.
I'm gonna throw you something else to marinate on. I did it last episode. I'm gonna do it to you again. Sorry.
Done.
Imagine these ancient societies, however they built these things, they were using Schumann resonance frequencies, natural energies of the earth, crystals, all these things. We know that crystals can store an incredible amount of information.
Yeah.
What happens if, this is very scientific and sci-fi kind of an idea, to make you either not sleep at night because of fear or not sleep at night because of the possibilities.
I'm never able to sleep at night.
Imagine if the AI we are generating today taps into a very, very ancient AI that's already been developed, that exists in the frequencies and bandwidths of the interconnecting energies of the world, ley lines, crystalline structures, what have you. What if one of the AIs we developed makes contact with an ancient AI and gets an ungodly amount of knowledge and power put into it all at once?
And then we find out the moon's hollow as well. And that, like, we were actually the first beings here. Like, and we were the ones that created that AI to begin with. And we've been here like 5 million years and we just lost our way. I would love that, bro. I don't know. I mean, I would hope that AI would end up being, what would you call it?
Benevolent, not benevolent. Malevolent.
Yeah, but benevolent. But fuck, bro. These crystals, mate, that are at these sites. And look, for the listeners, I know I didn't talk extensively about like the caves, obviously more about like the generational curse and stuff, which I've got no problem with. If anyone wants to truly check this stuff out, as I said, my vlogging style has been more of an observational one, as opposed to having deep understanding of the nature of the area that I'm in, the history and stuff like that. I give people little bits and pieces and little tads of different mythological aspects and stuff like that. But most of my vlogging is purely observational. And in this, I observe and show you geopolymers. I show you bore cut drill marks. I show you the access to water, how they managed to find water. I show you the evidence of how they managed to find water. I show you a bunch of things, dude. So each episode's anywhere from like sort of 45 minutes. The Kailasa one's like an hour and a half. It's like the longest. But yeah. So
if anyone out there was a huge fan of Ancient Aliens and those types of shows, just for the grand scale and majesty of the architecture,
yeah.
Strip away all the bullshit and ancient astronaut theorists say yes, all that jargon. These videos that Fozzy has put together are exceptional. I commend you on what you're doing. But for the listeners who are listening right now, who are starting to follow you after these last four or five episodes we've done, by the time this episode airs, you're most likely going to be back in India, are you not?
Correct. I will be back in India.
So, you know what? We're going to have to, wherever you can in the time you've got, and we can align ourselves with time, mate. We're going to have to do updates for sure.
We will. For sure, dude. For sure. I'll work something out. The first 6 weeks, I'm setting up my business. So the first 6 weeks, I'm focused on setting up my business so I can trade in Australia, make some money so then I can live comfortably, palm everything off to distributors and palm everything off to logistical businesses and stuff. And then I don't have to do fucking anything. And then during that time, and hopefully this will come into fruition the next 6 to 12 weeks, will be me traveling, going to the north of India, going to some even older places. And I've also been told about a cave system in one of the states in Uttar Pradesh, where the 600,000-year-old pyramid is that we didn't talk about.
Oh, we're going to get to that, don't you worry. We'll get to it next time.
But apparently there's a cave system there that connects all the way to Mount Kailash. We're talking like 120-kilometer cave system. And apparently it leads all the way to Shiva's abode in Kailash Mountain. So maybe I'll feel brazen and walk the whole way. Who knows? Who knows?
We'll see. That sounds like a good way to get attacked by chuds or mole people for sure.
Bro, if that means me with a GoPro and me with like my torch fighting them off, then so be it.
Brother, these conversations have been so good. I've thoroughly enjoyed them.
Me too.
One last time for the listeners, where can they follow your work, brother?
So they can follow me at Fozzie the Aussie, FOZZIETHE AUZZIE on Instagram, YouTube, Rumble, and of course X, formerly known as Twitter. So yeah,
thank you, my friend. This has been quite an eye-opening conversation. The parallels, though not the same, are very similar and kind of thrown me for six on this one. The similarities in our sleep paralysis, our family histories, quite creepy. I pray that your family curse is gone, my friend. I'm sorry for your recent loss. And
thank you.
You know, bless you, my friend. You've been a wonderful person to meet. And I'm looking forward to these conversations when you are back in India.
Thank you, brother. Thank you, brother. I'll talk to you soon.
See you, brother. Have a good night.
Thanks for having me.
Bye. Hey, everybody. It's closing time. You don't got to go home, but you can't stay here.